This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
It's been a busy week. My MD decided to go off on holiday, but not really holiday, after dicking about a golf game for like 2 days at the end of last week. So I've had a lot of stuff to pick up, really.
But I've been thinking that we're living in a world that has a distinct lack of community. The immediate thing that we could talk about is mental health. But I also actually think it could make better workplaces, even for physical safety. If we cared enough about our fellow worker, would it in so facto make a better workplace?
So a lot of people that I speak to see resilience as being kind of like an elastic band stretching. But actually, resilience is not about the stretch. Resilience is about the stretch and the return back to normal.
That's when you're challenged, like when you're surrounded by people that think what you do is a massive pain in their ass and it's stupid and it's over the top and it just stops me doing whatever I need to do. Because people that don't think that that brand doesn't still exist are naive. Yeah. It well and truly does. I'm surrounded by small businesses and trade-based businesses, construction-based, every single day, and it exists.
When I get a new starter coming to any business, or kind of I'm working with a client that has a new safety team type of thing, and they say, oh, mate, what should I learn? Like, oh my God, do I need to go on XYZ courses? But legitimately, there's only three things that I feel any safety professional that's coming in really needs to do, and it's build rapport, understand business and functional context, and set clear expectations for stakeholders. What do you think the barrier is kind of not allowing the safety community to flourish in the way that you might kind of see a different profession kind of coming together? And do you have an example of actually a profession that you kind of look at and think that is a tight-knit community?
I do think the trade community is a tight-knit community. They just all can relate to each other and they can all have a conversation, or they're just never really tight-knit community.
Do you think that safety is too tribal to have the same level of cohesive community? Like, for example, as far as I'm aware, there's no plumber that's going around saying, I'm doing plumbing differently because I don't agree with plumbing one. And I've tried plumbing too, but I want to do plumbing differently. Do you think that with HOP, with behavioural safety, with safety one, with safety two, with doing even something as simple as, oh, I came from doing knee wash versus doing the NCRQ, has the safety profession divided itself too much by its even dogmatic beliefs to some degree that stops us ever actually hoping to get more of a cohesive, unified community?
Isn't it funny that potentially that might people might be doing that in a desperate attempt to find a community? You know, before press record, I was just saying that I was in London yesterday, and There was someone playing a proper trumpet, and Sherry said, it sounds like your trumpet. And I was like, oh, cool, thanks.
Right, well, I'll tell you what, you know, I appreciate Sherry 2024 been on BGT. Could we see James on BGT in 2025 for his trumpet? It could be.
Maybe, I reckon. I don't know if the Rebrand and Safety audience know that, actually. And I wonder if Sherry would cut this out of the episode. Hopefully she doesn't. But for those that are listening / watching and don't know, but do watch Britain's Got Talent, the choir that were in Britain's Got Talent, Sherry was in said choir. And if you watch
the final,
went to the final. Unfortunately, Sherry didn't make it to final because she is with child and has been very ill. So she couldn't, everybody's fine, FYI, just in case anybody's worried, but she'd been really, really ill. So she couldn't make the final, but she was on the first audition where they were really heavily praised, and you can see her on live TV. So how cool is that? Yeah. Well done, Sherry.
Very cool.
Well done. I was in the background doing trumpets. I really wasn't. Anyway, how's things?
Oh, mate, I asked first. Go for it. Go on. How's things? How are you doing?
I feel tired this week. I've had a week off. I haven't had a week off. I've had a business owner's week off. World's smallest violin. I was supposed to have a week off. It's been a good week, actually. I've got lots done. Lots of stuff that's just been lingering around. Lots of conversations with new customers. But it's always been... I've picked up the last few times we've had a general election in that things go quiet around the general elections. Everyone seems to not commit to anything, and you get a lot of our customers are safety professionals, as you know, Pete, and I've talked to them, and they're all a bit frustrated that, you know, everything kind of stops. Their budget stops, their resource stops, everything kind of stops, but then it doesn't stop. The world carries on working, but decisions stop, in a sense. So I've felt a bit of that. But this last week, it seems to have been improving. There's more kind of conversations, and things look like they're kind of starting to get to a point of decisions and stuff like that, which is nicer. So I think we've got closer and closer to the point where it's done. And now, obviously, today, as we record this, is Friday the 5th. So we now know the result is out and it's all done. So that's good. Okay. The world can crack on now, and everything will change overnight, I'm sure, everybody was worried about. But yeah, so that was good. Yesterday I had the day off, and me and Sherry did a bucket list. What would you call it? A bucket list event, I suppose. We went to see Les Miserables, which...
very nice.
As well as a gig, I do quite like my musicals as well. And Les Mis has been on the list for a very long time, and we've just never got round to it because it ain't cheap. And like, if you're gonna go watch it, I'm kind of like, I want to watch good seats, but it was, yeah, just, oh, I mean, if you're not into musicals, you're not into musicals, but it's just phenomenal. What a story.
It is genuinely really good. I'd seen it at the Bradford Theatre, obviously not the same as London, but it's just phenomenal. Really, really good. I do have a question for you. And obviously, mm-hmm. we start these type of podcasts by kind of the first question is what you've been up to this week, right? And I know that you kind of said, well, smallest violin. There'll be a lot of business owners listening to this, right? And a lot of people that run their own consultancies, sole traders. Hey, there might even be interims, right? Which kind of puts them as sort of their own kind of self-employed individual as part of this. How do you deal with the guilt of taking time off when you... how do you deal with the guilt?
Oh, how do you deal with the guilt? I suppose you can't just, you don't, I don't know whether this is a right answer, or I don't think there is a right answer, but I don't think you deal with it. You just get used to it. Like I said, so we booked the whole week off. We actually only took one day off, and we only took that one day off because Sherry had jam-packed an agenda booked of bucket list, go to see Les Mis. We're in London all day. So everything was a tight agenda plan. But like, we're sitting there and we're like, we're still talking about the business. We're just less, I suppose, less formal. And we're doing it over a nice lunch or in a pub in London or whatever. I think you're also balancing the guilt of like father and motherhood as well. For us to go to London, we have got to like pie our child off on, it was my mother this time. So I had to like dump Maggie at my mum's house, and my mum had her overnight. So I don't think it goes. I think you just get used to it and you just carry on. I will. I don't know if this was a loaded question, Peter, but I will say that having a good team makes all the difference. So I think there is this thing. Yeah. I'll expect my 50 quid check in the post for this public. I think that going away, having a day off, if you are sole trader, I can't, you know, back in the, we didn't have any days off in the first 2 years of the business because it was just us. And, it is knowing that if something comes up, you or Carly will be able to jump on it and can jump on it. And then if it comes to me or Sherry on a day off, like, it's bad and it probably deserves us to kind of down tools and kind of, you know, jump on it kind of thing. But ultimately, I think, you know, you two make a big difference. So having a good team of people around you that you trust and are confident in makes a massive difference. I don't think the guilt ever... I tell you what, I felt more guilty. I don't know if I mentioned this publicly, but I felt more guilty about the golf issue that we had, last Friday?
It's not golf, James. It's professional networking that just so happens to be at a golf course, because both of us know that you can't play golf for shit. So
actually played very well that day. I was actually very happy with how I played that day. But that is normally true. So for context of those who don't know, we have a team meeting, and if there's anyone who's the most vocal in this business about how important these weekly team meetings are, is me. Like, I've banged on about them for ages. Not that anyone's against them. I think everyone's for them. It's just we're all so busy, right? Yeah. So like, everyone's for them, but I'm like, these are so important. We have to do this, blah, 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 blah. Proper anal about it. And then we had one booked in, and I screwed my whole, like, so I'd basically planned this beautiful day. It was, honestly, when I say, Peter, this day was meticulously planned, which for me is a win, is an understatement. I had planned gym in the morning, which I booked. I'd booked a class to go to the gym in the morning. Then I was like, before, so I get up, this is my normal routine-ish, is get up, walk the dog at 6. I get back and I'm in the gym for 7:15 class. And then I'm back home for about 8:30-ish. And then I'm like, run upstairs in the shower, coffee, toast, jump on the first call, whatever. And that was literally the plan for that day. So our call was going to be like 9:30, 10:00. So I was like, wicked, go walk dog, go to gym, come back, do this. Had another call. We had another meeting after that meeting. And then I was like, right, finish that. Golf gear in the boot. Off I go, play golf, do this networking thing for the charity that we support as a business. So it's a really lovely day. We tee off at like 1:30, 2:00. Perfect. The night before, I'm in a little WhatsApp group. I'm planning on getting there at 7:15. I'm planning on getting there at 7:30. I'm planning on getting there just before 8:00. Lads, the fuck are you talking about? What are you talking about, James? I'm like, we don't have to get there till like 1:00. Like, I know you're eager, but geez, James, we tee off at 8 a.m. What? I've got a meeting at 10 a.m. Like, they were like, you're joking, right? I was like, no, honestly, it was just, and so having to say to my team, I really want you to do this meeting, please carry on, do it, because there's loads of important stuff. And that week we'd had a particularly shit week and stuff like that, so I really wanted to be in this meeting. I felt more guilty about that, playing golf as like a stereotypical dickhead business manager. I'm not playing golf with the two of me. It felt horrible. It felt really horrible.
I can appreciate. I know that we've talked a lot about the values of risk fluent. Obviously, one of those is a rule for me and not for thee. Rule for thee and not for me. Now, like we said, the early bird gets the worm, but the early MD gets on the golf course before dawn. That's very much there for it, but. It's funny because it ties quite nicely to what you were just saying before about kind of like the time off type of thing. You know, we talk a lot about resilience in businesses, in functions, in kind of health and safety processes. We talk about things that are very tightly coupled. And I know that resilience of leaders, of health and safety professionals, gets thrown around quite a lot. But I often think people see resilience, I'm not going to say in the wrong way, but maybe not in the whole thing. So a lot of people that I speak to see resilience as being kind of like an elastic band stretching. Mm-hmm. But actually, resilience is not about the stretch. Resilience is about the stretch and the return back to normal.
Yep.
And at a point where you might feel guilty for kind of going out on holiday for a day, actually, you take time off where you can in other ways. You take kind of a mental breather in other ways, mm-hmm. because that, in theory, is the only way that you can do it. Yeah. So I appreciate your insight, and I appreciate the rawness of how you're sharing it as well. Because, you know, I guarantee there's a lot of people that are listening to this that are feeling, hey, I want to start a consultancy. Hey, I want to go on my own. Or, hey, I'm a leader of a consultancy at the moment. But yeah, is the guilt, is it just me? Is this an actual thing?
I also don't think it's consulting. It's like every business owner I talk to. So a friend of mine runs a really, really successful he worked, I wouldn't even call it that. It's like to say it's a hire business would be unfair. Like, so he does equipment hire for like festivals and theater and stuff like that. So like PAs, microphones and stuff like that. He does all of that. He's also a sound, a really, really top end, like sound and lighting engineer. So he's toured around the world with Matilda and stuff like that. Like, he's top dog. Yeah. I was texting him yesterday. I was on the way home from London, and I was just texting him. He's got all the exact same problems I've got, like all the exact same stresses I've got. Like, oh, I've just built this freaking massive office, and then we've gone quiet, and three people have left the business. And I'm like, right. So he's like, now I've got an office for eight people, and there's only fucking one of me in here. All these businesses are having the same problems. You know, he's got a quiet time at the moment. I've got a quiet time at the moment. He's starting to be unsure whether the quiet time is getting better. Our quiet time is starting to disappear and starting to become a busy time. Like, they're all the same problems. They're just all at different times. And sometimes they're all at the same time. Like I say, general elections and stuff never help. I think every business at the moment has been like a bit unnervy. Sorry, my hearing aid's driving me insane. But we all have the same problems, all of them.
Yeah.
Every single business owner. It's the same.
Without wanting to get like a platitude from you for a second, is there anything that you'd recommend for those people that are listening that are thinking, hey, I'm in the same boat?
Funny enough, yes, there is actually, and it was my topic that I was going to bring up later. Find a community would be mine. Find a like-minded community that you can vent to.
I'll tell you what, should we put a pin in that one to come back to it later on?
Let's do it. Nice. So what have you been up to?
It's been a busy week. My MD decided to golf on holiday, but not really holiday, after dicking about a golf game for like 2 days at the end of last week. So I've had a lot of stuff to pick up, really.
I walked into that.
It's been all right. I mean, honestly, when I see that man, I can give peace of my mind.
Me too. Tell him I'm looking for
it. But it's been a good week. So obviously we've got a new consultant in the business, and I've spent a good amount of the week kind of going through just a bit of coaching on a few different bits and pieces in the world of consultancy. So political management, the differences between products and services, how we can kind of productize what we do. And ultimately, I'm going to say dive into the dirty world of adaptation. But I think what's always surprised me throughout my career in health and safety is that there's actually very little original content that's created by safety professionals. The more time I spend in safety, the more time I kind of realize that people are either reusing what they've taken from different jobs or something that they found off the internet. And I want to stress there's nothing wrong with that at all. But it can be quite surprising for a lot of people coming into the industry that actually feel like they have to create everything from scratch. You really don't. You just need to have the curiosity to understand the requirements and the outcomes that are needed from the client, and then adapt the process that or the product that you're kind of using or found so that it's more bespoke, that it fits the purpose. And a lot of that comes down to simple things like, how do I Google effectively? What's my critical thinking like for cross-validating findings off websites because something's come from a non-peer-reviewed journal? And I tell you what, this legislation's a right pain in the arse, and I don't know really where to start with it. So actually Googling, adapting, verifying, validating, all of these different skills that come into play has been really good fun to work through. I mean, it's interesting when I get a new starter coming to any business, or kind of I'm working with a client that has a new safety team type of thing, and they say, oh, Pete, what should I learn? Like, oh my God, do I need to go on XYZ courses? I say, well, realistically, there's only one course you do need to go on to start with, and it's an Excel level 2 course, because the whole world runs on Excel. Like, it literally runs on Excel. So just learn Excel. But legitimately, there's only three things that I feel any safety professional that's coming in really needs to do. And it's build rapport, understand business and functional context, and set clear expectations with stakeholders. Like, all of the technical knowledge, all of that stuff, it comes in time. No one's a walking encyclopedia. I'm not walking an encyclopedia. I Google the hell out of stuff all the time. I literally do. So actually build rapport, understand context, set clear expectations. And that's been really, really nice to kind of work through, have a great set of coaching conversations, not only with our new starter, but also with a few of our clients that have got new safety team starters as well. It's been really nice. I've been doing a few site visits, making some bespoke tools, funnily enough, a couple from scratch, a couple from things that we've had before. So things like site coordination plans, CPPs, some for kind of like big multi-phase, multi-year projects. One of them I was working on, James, and I came across it, and it was about UXOs. And I was like, geez, I've never seen a UXO before. Do you know what UXO is?
UXO. I feel like I should know what that means, but no.
Unexploded ordnance.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. Where did you come across that?
It's the one down on the Thames.
Right.
So it's literally kind of 3 kilometres away from a Luftwaffe target. And there was when you look at the maps type of thing, it's like the nearest UXO that they'd found was on the north side of the river, but about 1 kilometre away from where we're working. So it's trying to kind of pick these bits out. I'm like, oh my God. And do you know what my first thought was? Because of the way that my brain works, right? I was like, what else is underground in London? Plague pits. Because actually, it sounds really dense,
can it live long, like the virus? Surely not underground.
Basically, what I'd say is if anyone has any concerns about construction work in London, definitely, if you haven't done it already, definitely check the plague pit registers that are online just to double check, because there's actually a lot more than I certainly thought there was before I started. These are the joys of being a little country bumpkin from the north, mate. We don't really have a lot of plague pits that are like in big city centres around here. I mean, don't get me wrong, like the further north you go, the more kings you find on the car parks. But other than that, there's not too much that you kind of get through. So yeah, so that's been quite fun learning about, getting into the detail of things like UXOs, plague pits and kind of big CPPs that are there for construction projects. But then also scaling that back to things like CPP for a little event where someone's literally got 3 contractors on an all-day event that they're creating, and we need to then follow all the relevant bits from CDM for an event point of view as well. So it's been quite nice actually taking what's been really big and being able to scale it down and adapt it for a few different clients. I've enjoyed the creativity that comes with that to make it relevant. I live for that type of stuff. It's good fun.
Distracted by plague pits. I'm totally I'm on a map.
Genuinely,
I'm fucking mind blown that this is a thing. I didn't even think of that.
It's going to sound really daft as well, but like even simple things. We've got a few clients down in the southwest, and we're working through the risk register. And like, oh, we've not got radiation risk. And I said, are you sure? So we don't do what we got with radiation paint. I said, it's radon.
Yeah,
and I'm not
trying
to say that in like a way that like, oh, you guys should have known about it type of stuff, but it's surprising what's under our feet. It really is. Really, really is. And I think if it's anything that this last week has taught me, genuinely, when you get into the whole plague pit stuff, mate,
is there genuinely a risk to it if you dug it up?
That's probably a good one to go through at another time. I'm going to say it's debatable, but I don't think anyone in any respect would want to take the risk of relaunching the plague if they were to come across previously undocumented plague pit.
Our plague pit's still dangerous. Once the body has died and been buried, plague on the body doesn't last very long, so it doesn't survive well in the ground. It's not a live bacteria, so it doesn't have the potential of spreading infections. In the modern world, the DNA that was identified on teeth samples wasn't live bacteria. This was after one was unearthed in Essex.
Yeah.
So this was just in the news, so it's obviously not,
the pictures can be quite intense. It's definitely not one for Google Safe Search. It's quite intense. Yeah, it's really quite intense. I think the biggest issue that I find, and why perhaps I'm a little bit like cagey about the relative risk of things, is that a lot of the time we deal with businesses from a reputational risk point of view and kind of holistic risk management piece. And to be honest with you, when you're only one TikTok away from a viral story, the last thing you want is to be breaking ground and breaking ground into a pile of bodies. It can be a challenge. It can be a challenge. It's not a common challenge that we come across, but it can be a challenge. And the perception of risk is very different than the actual health and safety risk at times as well. So, yeah, wow. It's been an interesting week, James. Interesting week.
Wow.
Yeah.
I did not expect you to go there, but that I'm here for that. I'm here for that. That sounds cool as shit. I'm well here for that. That plague pit in Essex was from building the Elizabeth line. So
I was actually.
It's not like it's not like, well, apparently it was a part of the Elizabeth line construction. I was skim reading it, so I didn't know the Elizabeth line went to, would it go to, it goes across the, anyway, so yeah, it's not unheard of, you know.
No.
Wow,
interesting stuff. Like, I know, so it's been quite
pun intended. I really want to get down that rabbit hole, but I just don't know enough about it to go down it. But I would really like to.
Don't worry, James, we'll be going down it soon enough. I promise you that.
Oh, great. Yeah. Oh, God. I regret saying that now. I meant on the podcast, not in a serious, actual, like, work related.
Okay, all right. Okay, yeah, gotcha. Oh, yeah, in that case, we'll cover it, that topic, whenever we want. We really will. So, maybe moving swiftly on, James, into what we've been up to this week. Because I appreciate you've been on holiday and nursing your golf injuries and have been too tired following a day out with your wife yesterday. You know, it's very difficult, very challenging, Dad. But legitimately, I appreciate it's been a bit of a challenging couple of weeks with working through a lot of different bits. So what have you been thinking about this week? What's been on your mind?
I have been thinking about, across different contexts, about society and community in and its relationship with work and relationship with safety. So I'll explain that. So this touches on a couple of things. So a couple of weeks ago, I think we mentioned on the podcast around the British economy, productivity, Labour's manifesto of increased workers' rights. And then we start talking about French politics and their productivity is up. And that they have increased workers' rights. But what we don't have probably in our society / community is this like get on the streets and protest kind of collectivism that they potentially have in France that we don't have, or that we used to have but probably lack a little bit now. And combined with this like thing that I heard on a podcast where this Tory MP said, and I'm going to get to a point at some point, I promise, this Tory MP said that everyone in Britain, when they get to the polling booth, are on their own, and they will vote for individuality in a sense. So they'll vote for what benefits them when no one's looking over their shoulder. And that's why Tories always win. And I was like, what a horrible way to win. But also like, what a shame that is kind of this lack of like collective, I don't know, consideration maybe was, and this was just pondering in my head. I just so happened to be going to watch Les Mis, which is literally about like French Revolution and like, and it's the I don't know if anyone's watched it, but like if you haven't watched the film, watch the film. But like it's the most emotional thing you've ever watched, and it's so much in it, the story of love and story of sacrifice for others, and the story of all of these different personalities coming together and how they interact. And it's just it's a fucking beautifully powerful story. It's unbelievable. I cried numerous times throughout this show. And it was this same thing around society and this, and it just kept going around in my head. And then Sherry booked this out of nowhere show that she was like, that she'd seen with a friend and was like, you need to watch this, James. This is right up your street, called The Choir of Man. Now, if anyone is going to London, they want to have a really good time, go and watch this show, Choir of Man. It's great. If you like to be involved, like audience participation, sit in the, what's it called, on the circle, no, on the ground, no, the stalls on the ground floor.
Oh, the stalls,
sit in the stalls, because you will get involved. If you don't like to get involved, sit in the circle, don't sit in the stalls. On the stage is a working bar, so you can walk up onto the stage and get a pint. Obviously not mid-show, but you walk up onto the stage and just about 10 minutes, 20 minutes before the show starts, the actors come out and they just walk around setting up the stage whilst you're there sitting there having a pint. And they're talking to you and it's just surreal. But you're actually on the stage getting a pint, which one is cool as shit. Like, what an idea. It was so good. Because the whole notion of this show is around a pub and the community, and it's deep rooted with this message of particularly men's mental health, but it's talking about mental health per se as a collective and the power of the community that a pub builds. And I'm not sure people are meant to cry when they're watching Choir of Man, because it's a very fun show, but I found it quite powerful. Having friends in the last like 3 or 4 years that have gone through some significant challenges mentally, and thinking back to, couldn't help but think back to like other times that like we used to just go to the pub and chew fat, and actually how powerful that was to our own mental health. And then it made me think about way, 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 way back on Rebound and Safety, where we had Jason Anker on the podcast. And he said to me something which I thought of now, and this was years ago. He was like, we've lost the community that we used to have. And he was like, and I think that is a big issue with workplace mental health and overall societal mental health. He was like, because you used to have like working men's club and conservative clubs and labor clubs and all of this stuff. And it was this thing that you would go to work and you would come back and you would go to the pub and you would connect and you would build relationships, you would vent. And that's kind of what this show is about. They're not talking about clubs, they're talking about pubs, but like, it's the same thing. It's this whole show of like this community of people that just come together and share problems and all of this stuff. And all of this stuff is all happening within a week, right? And it's weird. And whilst all this is happening, the safety exchange that David Proven and the team built had announced that they were closing that down. And that it hadn't worked, essentially. So it's a community, a safety community, a digital one, yes, but still a community that has kind of, I don't want to say failed, I think that would be unfair, but like, you know, not quite worked. And it made me think about Project Meletium and the Health and Safety Network. Also, I don't think that quite worked. So we kind of are living, or I feel, I've been thinking that we've been, I don't know if we are, but I've been thinking that we're living in a world that has a distinct lack of community. And I think that the immediate thing that we could talk about is mental health. But I also actually think it could make better workplaces, even for physical safety. Because if we think back to the example I was given about Les Mis, if we cared enough about our fellow worker, would it in so facto make a better workplace, in so facto make a safer workplace? So I've been thinking a lot. That's a really long conversation, like long description of what I've been thinking about, but I'm just trying to give it some context of all these little things that all just kept coming back to the same golden thread of like this like individualist society we've probably created ourselves, or I feel like we've lost community where we don't look out for one another in a sense. Like if I think about my friends, for example, I've got like a small group of I don't have a massive group of friends. I've got a relatively small and close group of close friends. We like don't see each other anymore at all. Mm. But it's this world of individuals is what it feels like. And that might just be my world. I don't know. But I was sitting there watching a show that was literally made about we don't go to the pub anymore and we don't have community anymore and we should go to the pub. And then at the end of it, it was like donate to this mental health charity. And I was just like, I don't think this is the main problem. I think this is, I think we're all struggling with a lack of community and a lack of collectiveness in a way. So yeah, that's been my mind for the last, I'd say week, maybe 2 weeks.
Thank you for sharing, James, because there's a lot to unpack.
Yeah. We're not going to get through that in the next 30 minutes. That's for sure.
But it's a good thought and genuinely, do you know, I think there's a lot of people that will be listening to this that will have picked out a few points that you've raised that might well resonate with them. From those that, for example, might be at the early stage of their career. They've gone through maybe university, they've had a really close kind of tight-knit group at university type of things, and then they've literally spread out all across the UK, all across the world type of thing. Yeah. They've all gone into type of different jobs. We've seen from kind of like through COVID, they moved to like a digital type of team space. And then don't get me wrong, there's sort of like coming back to the office type of thing. But actually, those that have come back to the office, from the ones that I've spoken to, they say it's a very different environment. Mm. And it feels like it's a different environment because the commonality and the camaraderie isn't necessarily there in the same way. It's just, it's a different type. It doesn't feel as collegiate. It doesn't feel as interlinked. It almost feels like there's an element of bittersweetness because they've been able to have kind of this different lifestyle at home that's fit more into their values. And now coming back into the office, it's like trying to wear a different set of shoes than the ones you've been wearing for like the last couple of years type of thing. You're still wearing shoes, it just doesn't feel as nice. It's not molded to your foot as nice.
Yeah.
So,
what used to define us was where we're from. That was always our collective thing, wasn't it? Like, right, because you didn't have the internet kind of thing, maybe.
So I'll jump on that for a second. And this is like a real international perspective for a second. Do you know many Americans, like people from the United States?
Yeah, a few.
Nearly every kind of American that I've spent a decent amount of time with invariably comes around to the question of heritage and where have you come from and like where have your parents come from type of thing. So they might say, oh, you know, like are you from, I don't do an American accent, but you're from the UK, you know, are you like half Scottish, half English type of thing? And they might say, no, I'm like half Polish, or I might say like I'm half German and a quarter Scottish, quarter English, whatever it's going to be type of thing. Say, oh, well, I'm like a fifth generation Irish descendant. Yeah. And you're kind of just like, wow, okay, you really know your stuff, like behind this type of thing. And heritage and sort of like location becomes so intertwined to their identity that it's quite jarring actually to kind of think, okay, from the UK's point of view, we don't have such a deep-seated same appreciation of heritage type thing. It just doesn't exist. We don't have the same level of conversations.
Mm-hmm.
If we scale that, like, kind of,
yeah, go on, carry on.
I was going to say, if we kind of scale it down to sort of the minutest level for a second, we kind of see safety as, technically safety is a lot smaller than people make it out to be. There are no 6 degrees of separation behind it, but it does feel still quite tribal from a sector by sector type of thing. Consultants know a lot of consultants. People in food know a lot of people in food. People in FMCG or retail know a lot of people in FMCG and retail type of thing. It's just everything is quite isolated in that respect, but it's not isolated from a sense of community or a sense of camaraderie. It's just a sense of comparison, really. And it's almost like actually people that have come into safety, I don't know, with the greatest respects, this is a huge tarring brush here, I don't know if they place a huge amount of value on the fact that it's health and safety that brings us together to say that we're in it. Like, how many people have you spoken to when you've asked, oh, how did you get into safety? And they kind of said, oh, I just kind of fell into it.
Yeah, nearly all of them.
A part of me has wondered for a long time, is the relative feeling of a lack of community and health and safety because a lot of people never made the active choice to come into safety? They kind of fell into it, found that they were good at it or that they enjoyed it to some degree and they've stuck with it.
I think it's because they're not. Go on. Sorry.
No, go on. Go on.
I think it's because most are not proud to be in it. I think we might say in a community of safety professionals, we're proud to be in it. But can you sit in the local pub or surrounded by tradies and say you're proud to be in it? Because that's when you're challenged. Like when you're surrounded by people that think what you do is a massive pain in their ass and it's stupid and it's over the top and it just stops me doing whatever I need to do. Because people that don't think that brand doesn't still exist are naive, if I'm honest. But like, because it well and truly does. I literally am surrounded by small businesses and trade-based businesses, construction-based, every single day, and it exists. Literally didn't get a word in edgeways surrounded by the banter that I received at that golf do on Friday with the amount of shit that I get. And it's funny.
Did you risk assessment for that golf swing? Quick. Mind your head, James. Get the hard hat on. It's fine.
Just all the time. It's 24-7. And part of me does think, like, Maybe it's not like we're not proud to. Maybe it's like we're not allowed to be proud. I don't know. But it is. It's hard to do that when society doesn't, as an overall, I think, doesn't really understand what we do at all, and or provide kind of a sense of value to it. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So
I don't know.
You know, you mentioned before about Safety Exchange had closed down. We know that kind of PM had closed down, Project Meteam had closed down. From that point of view, these are kind of two isolated examples of grassroots, established and driven safety communities that haven't kind of progressed in sort of like a prolonged period of time type of thing. What do you think the barrier is that's kind of not allowing the safety community to flourish in the way that you might kind of see a different profession kind of coming together? And do you have an example of actually a profession that you kind of look at and think that is a tight-knit community of professionals?
Ooh, that's a good example. That's a good question. I do think the trade community is a tight-knit community. Like, they give each other shit, like, oh, the Sparkies live this beautiful life, just rolling in cash, driving around in the Mercedes and shit, which I love all of that stuff. Like, I think it's hilarious. Like, and the amount of shit that we get for what we do in it. But, like, they do very much, like so all of my close mates, like five or six of my mates that are all close, they're all in construction based or relatively kind of like, traditional kind of construction engineering type roles within our business, or it's their business, and they just all can relate to each other, and they can all have a conversation about, or they're just, they're a really tight-knit community. And if you look at like what On the Tools have done, they've gone from this Facebook page that was just like, I don't know, but as far as I was aware, it was just a place to share stupid videos of shit that happens on construction sites, to now being this huge business, all built on this like shared collective frustration / banter / whatever in construction. I do genuinely think the trade sector is a really tight-knit community.
So I've got a question again. This is a bit of a loaded question, right? But do you think that safety is too tribal to have the same level of cohesive community? Like, for example, there's no, as far as I'm aware, there's no plumber that's going around saying, I'm doing plumbing differently because I don't agree with plumbing one. And I've tried plumbing two, but fuck it, I want to do plumbing differently. Or like, it's just
new plumbing view is plumbing.
Right? New view plumbing, right? And hey, there might be new view plumbing, right? And I don't know, I literally don't know. But do you think that with HOP, with behavioral safety, with safety one, with safety two, with doing even something as simple as, oh, I came from doing NEBOSH versus doing the NCRQ, which might be perceived the same as doing A-levels versus doing BTECs type of thing, the deep-seated bias that might come with people feeling that there's a difference between, well, hang on a sec, you're chartered, but you're not cert, but you're tech, but you're affiliate, you're not even one of those, what the hell? Like, has the safety profession divided itself too much by its, in some ways, maybe even dogmatic beliefs to some degree that stops us ever actually hoping to get more of a cohesive, unified community?
It is isn't it funny that potentially that might, people might be doing that in a desperate attempt to find a community?
Okay.
So that, like, I'm going to become chartered to find a community of like-minded people that are also chartered, and they get there and they may or may not find it. I'm going to announce myself as a new view safety professional because I want to find a community of like-minded people that think that way. Like, but I think is interesting, right, is that what we used to have was like if I was thinking about this comparison that I originally made of like the time when we had working men's clubs, right? And just using that Frasers, that's what they used to be called, right? So like you had that working men's club. It was a very geographical based community. Whereas now it's a very like values based community sense. Maybe like you connect with people over the internet about what you like or what you love or what you do or what you, you know, enjoy, whatever it is, right? And I think there's a beauty to that. I think that's a really good thing to have. I'm not saying it's one or the other, but what I think we have now lacked is when it was geographical based community, it was a community of differing opinions, values, beliefs, and so on. But it didn't matter because the founding community was geographical, so we would have cognitive diversity to a certain extent. Like I don't think it was like this amazing utopia, and I'm not saying that, but it was like I think that you would get this sense of like, and that's kind of what they were saying in this Choir of Man show, is that it doesn't matter what you are, who you love, where you're from, or any of this stuff. We all come to the pub and we just share with each other, and we just engage and we look after each other because we're identified by this pub that we've built, this community. And I was like, it made me want to buy a fucking pub and just be like, I want to build this in a pub. Like it was beautiful. I made me wanted to join the local old grammarians club, which is literally like 5 minutes down the road. It was beautiful, but it was like, we didn't have this. Now we've got these communities where we all kind of agree with each other, which I think is a good thing, but there's a trade-off to that, in a sense.
Yeah. No, I agree. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah. There's something else there around your, when it's geographical, it's like, you know, when you think back in the day, it'd be like, so like I'm in Northamptonshire, and in Northamptonshire there's this like pretty famous little town called Corby, because you have this weird Northampton accent, like what I've kind of got, which sounds a little bit cockney and a little bit farmery, and it's really weird, and it kind of works like that gradually. It gets more and more northern as you go up, but then all of a sudden as you're halfway through or towards the tail end of Northamptonshire, everyone starts sounding Scottish all of a sudden. And that's Corby, right? And I love it, but I was raised to hate it because I lived in the next town called Kettering and we hate each other. So that's just how things are, right? But Corby's this fascinating town in that it was a steel town. So Stuart and Lloyd's basically owned the entire town. Everyone that lived in Corby worked at Stuart and Lloyd's, a football club. Stuart and Lloyd's football, rugby club, Stuart and Lloyd's rugby club. It was, everything was Stuart and Lloyd's. There was this kind of community built around work, which I thought was really interesting. So yes, it was geographical, but it was around work. And there's something about like knowing that the person next to you is who you're working with tomorrow. And I do wonder if that made things a, or maybe not made it safer, but had the potential to make it safer, because the community was literally right here. Like we build a relationship with that person collectively. Whereas when we're trying to create communities that are broader, and I think that's really cool and really awesome thing to have, the trade-off is that it's like we're less of a community with Steve or Bob or Sheila or Charlie, who's on the shop floor in a sense. Like everything's kind of too big now, in a sense. I don't know.
Do you know, it's funny. I was literally thinking the exact same thing while you were saying there, that even, and this is not to knock kind of like regional branch type groups that exist within sort of safety bodies type of things, but a part of me wonders if they're almost too big to be delivering truly on or reaching the potential that they could do, because it's trying to please too many people across too big of a geographical area. It's like, for example, if I think about Leeds, like Leeds is a massive metropolitan area. Actually, why isn't there a safety in Leeds group? Or like a, I think I've seen one that I think Marissa Firkins is a part of that's down in Birmingham, I want to say. Like I could have sworn I've seen a post a couple of bits on it in the past, where it's like a tight geographical area, similar to BNI, but just literally for safety professionals in that metropolitan area. So actually, I think you might be onto something there, that actually, from safety, maybe safety's point of view is that we always try and go too big, maybe we always try and go, I'm going to say too tribal type of thing. We go like, you know, you're safety one, you're safety two, but you hop, you're not. Are you progressive about this? You're not about that. Actually, we're kind of looking at the wrong denominator here. Realistically, should we just be looking at grassroots level, dynamic, local geographical groups instead that bring just safety professionals together? And we go out to the pub or we go out and try and attempt to play golf one day and just talk through type of things afterward. Or, you know, if we're all in Leeds, say, for example, like, oh, could I reach out? I don't know, we've got Jet2 at Leeds Bradford Airport. Hey, do you reckon you could just give us a tour in Leeds? We might have like the Tetley, for example, that's just been bought out by Kirksall Brewery, and say, hey, you are literally creating a brand new brewery in here. How would you feel about a team of safety professionals coming in? Just have a look at what you're doing in the build stage. It'd be great to sort of get involved with something locally. We'd learn something. You guys would get the benefit of having a group of people type of stuff come in. Mm-hmm. You could even, if you wanted to, if it's led by a single consultant, for example, you could say, look, it's like a no charge thing from what we're doing. We're just literally all here to learn and talk through challenges. If there is any advice, it goes through one person that has indemnity insurance right behind it. So if there is anything that comes up, it's been vetted and it goes through. And then if anything happens, you're fine.
Yeah.
But we get kind of a collective shared experience where everybody wins. It's geographically supported to each other. I don't know, mate. I feel like there's actually something there. It's not bringing back the pub to the point of the choir man, but it's bringing something local. It's bringing something tangible, something meaningful, and something that actually, no matter what happens, like, we're here because we're all in Leeds. And that's the beauty of it. At the end of the day, we're no more than half an hour away from each other.
Yeah. I do think there is a little bit more of it up north than there is like south. I don't know. Like, there's pockets of it, isn't it, around the... So I'd say, like, in London, there's pockets of it within London. Like, people are really quite proud and strong community kind of based living in the pockets of London. I feel like up north, there's a lot more of it as well, which is, I think, a lot of that is it's a kind of typical roots of like northern community. I think it's really strong, as it always has been. I feel like some areas like Birmingham, for example, I don't really know Birmingham that well, but I always get a vibe that Birmingham centre has like this real strong sense of community. But and I'm conscious of time because we haven't even asked you what you've been thinking about. We're gonna have to pie that off, Pete. I think
to be honest with you, genuinely it's the same thing. But just very quickly, it was about how can we be more effective about sharing our honest mistakes as health and safety professionals. And it's kind of funny in some ways, because in a roundabout way, having a platform to do it in a non-judgmental place where you can just talk with your peers, it actually comes out on there as well. So I say that we've been thinking about the same things, just from different angles.
Yeah. And ultimately, what's interesting is something that I think we touched on this when we, in a Project Millennium conversation way back in the day, but like, is it harder to be honest about failures and different ways of doing things in safety? Because we feel like people's lives / physical health / actual health or whatever, mental health and so on, all of that stuff is too much to gamble with. So it's really hard to say we've screwed up, or it's really hard to say let's try this new thing. One of the other things that I don't want to put in there, that maybe we roll this conversation onto the next one, but also like this week it came out that the fatality rates have gone up again. So as a nation, we're not doing great at physical safety. And then Dom Cooper made a really interesting comment, which I'm inclined to agree, but I think that there's a middle ground. So he's basically saying that it's gone up because we're too distracted by it. Safety's too distracted by what's sexy now, e.g. mental health. And that's what we're spending our time talking about. And I think there is part of that. I genuinely think there is part of that. And he was like, and his stance has always been the same. And he said it on Rebranding Safety as well, in that we're not competent. We're not psychologists. You know, we shouldn't be guiding people on that. And I'm not sure we are. I think what we're trying to do is basically just create a more structured system of management, managing people, managing behaviors, managing risks and so on. That's really all safety is trying to do, I think. And the HSE management standards is a really good example of that. All we're trying to do is create better management within a workplace. So I do think there is a place for us to sit and play in there. But ultimately, it's kind of like this conversation for me was all connected as well of like, would we be able to deal with both of these if we just had a better connection with our communities, whether they are work or geographical or what? Like, could we genuinely solve both? We know that community is good for mental health. We know that strong relationships are good for mental health. We know that relationships within the workplace is good for mental health and stress reduction. So we also have seen that people do care for each other better if they have more connection. I believe so. There's a lot here to talk about. I'm not sure what it looks like, but I definitely think there's something here.
No, I can believe it. I genuinely can. And this is going to sound such a tangent for a second, but have you ever heard of the dead internet theory?
The dead internet theory.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No. In a very brief kind of way, all of like the little individual hosted websites that had quirky and interesting information on have slowly died over the years. And what we find is that things like special interest forums have reduced in kind of activity for the sake of moving over to sort of like bigger platforms. But the actual engagement and processes of talking about things becomes more difficult to access because you can't search for things better. You can't re-engage in like previous topics about particular things that you might have been interested in. And actually it fragments the community that it's tried to bring together in this sort of big platform. So for example, like Facebook is a great example of this. It's technically brought billions of people onto the platform. You get individual groups. There are health and safety groups, for example, that are on there, but actually it's very difficult to search through the posts to go through actually what was this particular topic about. How can I sit, as I say, I want to talk at like Kosh on that particular forum or in that group. You can't really do that very easily because it's all just individual posts type of things. It's really tough. So actually, like, if I look at some things on the internet that I've searched for, the Irish forum comes up every now and again. And actually, there was a point where that was quite a cool digital platform for people to talk about things and discuss things, but it is
not so long ago either.
Exactly, exactly. So actually, could... To a degree, I can totally hear the idea about getting distracted by what's sexy because we get distracted by what's big. We get distracted by the Facebooks. We get distracted by the big bodies type of stuff because why wouldn't you? They're big, they're loud, they're bright. They demand a certain approach to type of things, but are they really what's best for you as an individual? Probably not, but you don't have an alternative because there is no alternative because the alternatives have died. The little community groups have perished that could have been that before.
Yep.
So,
and how much value and like, I'm slightly creating a digress here, which we won't go down because we don't have time. But like, how much stuff is missed because it's outshone by the big brands and the big names? Like, how many people are doing some really cool shit and some really amazing work, but because they work for like Smith's Engineering in the small town in Northamptonshire, will never be a keynote speaker in London in December.
Yeah.
It's
a great point. Just,
and that's the trade-off as well. Like so this is where this gets really interesting. If our communities are too geographically restrictive, geographically restricted, then we don't break out to share the learnings beyond that geographical limit, so to speak. So I want to be very clear. What I'm not saying is, oh, the world used to be better back in the day. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is we've gone too extreme one way, which I think extremes are necessary for change. So we have to try an extreme first, and then we find the middle ground, right? I don't want us to lose this sense of community, this geographical community, this close community, by knowing who Bob is and knowing who Sheila is, that we used to have, what I feel like we used to have back in the day anyway.
Yeah, I agree. You have inspired a good idea in me from that. I think there's something that we can do, but I'm going to have to tell you about it a little later on.
Okay.
But you've inspired something, mate. No, genuinely. Because I think perhaps one takeaway from this for me throughout my career is that community has defined my position that I'm in now. I would not be doing what I'm doing today. I would not be where I am today if it weren't for community within health and safety. So genuinely, I'm a massive proponent of it. I think we should have more of it. And actually, yeah, maybe there is something. Actually, yeah, sod it. Yeah, there's got to be something that we got to do.
It's I almost, think there is.
Yeah,
sure.
Absolutely. What? Okay. Obviously, people listening to this, what do you think? Do we need more community? Do you feel like you are lacking in community? Do you feel quite isolated that you aren't necessarily represented by the communities you are a part of, type of thing? I'd love to know.
I'd phrase it slightly differently, actually. A question for the listeners. Why do communities keep seeming not to work within safety? So we have IOSH, we have RSM. We have IOSH and RSM. They're the most successful communities within our profession, and for IOSH by a country mile. But there's a lot of chatter around how people are not happy with IOSH, and same for RSM. I think my experience is we started Project Meletium, which was then rebranded into Health and Safety Network, which didn't also seem quite land, but what we had in it felt phenomenal. I think the people that were in it would all agree it was an amazing period. And you know, it was a profit business, but we never made any profit and we fucking lost money on it. But like, it was phenomenal what we had in it. We've had David Proman's community kind of not work either. Like, why is it not landing? What are people not getting from communities that are currently in safety? Tell us why it's not working. I'm not saying I'll fix it, but I'd be very interested to know. We've got not very long. And we didn't do one last week because you had to go and selfishly catch a train to go see your beautiful family. So out of order of you. I'm going to randomly pick a question.
Ooh, go for it.
This one. This is interesting. Okay. From Mohammed Umar. Hopefully I got your name right. Apologies if I haven't. Thank you, Mohammed, for your question. Here is the question, Peter. Are you ready?
I am. Always ready.
How can big organizations assist the companies who don't have proper safety management systems, particularly in countries like Africa and Asia, or African and Asian countries, he said. So essentially you're talking about how can these big businesses that have the resources help those areas / businesses / countries / communities, whatever, that don't have those resources? How can they help? This is fascinating. This is a whole conversation in its own right. Interesting that we've landed on something that's kind of...
We should have given more time to this now, because it's... Do you know, I think I'm going to try and give it a quick answer right behind stuff. Mm-hmm. So this is a bit fast and dirty. The first things first, we can't help others necessarily to our fullest ability unless our cup is full ourselves. And actually, we need a bit of introspection as a large organization to actually fairly and objectively benchmark how good are we? Are we drinking the Kool-Aid, or actually are we as good as we think we are behind this?
Yes.
And what lens are we measuring good from? So I think that's kind of the first bit. Are we measuring good in the sense that we don't have any accidents? Or are we measuring good in the sense that actually we invest in our employees and they leave our organization healthier and happier than they were when they started as part of it? And that last part has a profound impact for kind of those smaller businesses and communities that are, for example, maybe in less resourced parts of the world, that work becomes, unfortunately, it's something that can kill you. But it is also something that can absolutely categorically improve your quality of life and the outcomes of everyone in your family as a result of that, because it allows you to fulfill so much more of Maslow's hierarchy of needs at the base level than you would have otherwise have had access to. So I think you've got kind of one key thing to start with: introspection. Review yourself. Are we as good as we say we are? I think the next step, and it depends entirely on the scope of your business, but define the parameters of your support. So for example, if we look at, let's take kind of emissions, generally speaking, from an environment point of view, you look at scope one, scope two, scope three. Actually, can you apply a scope one, scope two, scope three to health and safety through your supply chain instead? And actually say, okay, we know that we've got a handle here on scope one. We're now going to focus on scope two, but we know that that's the limit of our parameters behind it, because that's reasonably all we can resource from a health and safety point of view right now. So you might choose to do it that way, or you might actually say, right, let's map out our supply chain system, literally from raw materials through to the consumer relative to what it is that we're producing, and say, okay, are we going to focus on one part ahead of us and one part behind us, dependent on where we are? Or are we going to go all the way back to the primary producers? Because actually, the primary producers have the biggest point of exploitation, the biggest part of risk, especially if you're doing like food manufacturing. The level of injuries and ill health that can arise from agriculture in the countries that were mentioned can be huge. That there's massive issues. I watched even something as simple as chocolate, right? Chocolate making. If you have a look at the amount of exploitation that goes on in cocoa farming across the world, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely crazy. Yeah. So again, actually thinking, okay, we have the capacity to help where it's most needed. It might be most needed at the primary producer stage in agriculture, but then you think to yourself, okay, we're not dealing with people getting injured here, James. We're dealing with child trafficking. We're dealing with major organized crime. We're dealing with risks that, quite frankly, are way out of our pay grade as safety professionals to be able to support with, or actually from a morality point of view, they're not something that we can deal with ourselves, because we're trying to deal with institutional political corruption. So you've got introspection to start with, to look at your own business. You've then got setting the parameters as to where you think you can help in that respect. And then it's really, for me, I think it's a case of actually going out and speaking to the people within the parameters that are at the front line, but the people that are then doing the job itself. We often say that you can't have effective technical safety outcomes if you aren't looking at transformational elements as well. So you can't just look at how do we improve a risk assessment if, for example, the culture of that organization literally works people to death. A risk assessment isn't going to make a squat's worth of difference if the person that's doing that job is having to work 96 hours in a week. Like, there's it's just never going to fly. So again, I think that there's that kind of understanding here about you've got the parameters of the supply chain and the focus area, but then realistically you need to think, okay, what am I going to look at here? Is it in isolation or is it cohesive? Is it holistic as part of that? Honestly, my recommendation, don't go cohesive. I know that sounds a bit counterintuitive for a second, but you'd be taking on way too much. A business would take on way too much unless they are like a multi-billion pound full resource it with a massive team type of thing, get the relevant stakeholder backings from regulators, political kind of individuals, policing, enforcement. Like, you're going to have a tough time if there's some of those significant issues. But actually, the last thing that I'd say on that is, once you've worked out cohesive versus isolation and you've picked out the area that you want to look at, don't look at safety for the answer. And I know that sounds really stupid, but like, if I think about one of the most innovative things that I saw years and years ago now, and it was about how to provide lighting to exceptionally low-skilled workers in Africa in their homes. And rather than presenting them with like electricity from a light's point of view, this guy literally made like a chemical solution, put it in a plastic bottle, and then attached it to the roof, and it had like a luminescent.
Oh, I saw that.
Kind of, yeah,
and put it in the, drilled a hole in the like aluminium kind of roof, yes, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like a freaking, it's like an LED light. Yeah. It was mad.
It was, yeah. And it literally, it just dramatically improved lighting as part of that. Yeah. There's a great example that I've seen before now, and it was from a guy called Paul Verrico that works at Eversheds. It's a legal firm in Leeds. And he talked through an example of what had a more profound impact and benefit on children's educational rates in a third world country. In a specific example, was it giving them books that were in English when they were for ages between 3 to 6, or was it working through a full deworming regime? And actually, it was a medical deworming regime that had a much more profound and positive impact on educational outcomes than just giving them English speaking books. So, you know, when we think about education, we think books. Actually, for the type of countries that might have been mentioned, dependent on your parameters that you're working at, books might not be the answer. Deworming might be the answer. Exactly. So don't think about safety in some respects, but conversely to that, when you're thinking about the problems that you're solving, if you close your eyes and you hear hooves, think horses, not zebras. It's very easy to get distracted by the novel, to get distracted by the possibility of the big sexy question and the big issue type of stuff, but actually, in reality, you're not dealing with zebras, you're dealing with horses, and you're dealing with horses 95% of the time. So keeping yourself grounded from that point of view. So in order, introspection, parameter setting, cohesive versus isolation decision making. What was the next one that I'd said after that? Think outside the box, or think outside safety. And when you hear hooves, think horses, not zebras.
And I'm not overall, quite sure I understand the horses zebra thing. Like, a horse is normal, like, but people assume it's a zebra when actually it's just a normal horse. Is that kind of
people would say it's zebras when actually it's horses, because it's
you know how to manage a horse because a horse is known, and
chances are is that it's horses. So don't kind of say the answer, oh, what can you hear when you hear hooves? I hear zebras. I don't hear zebras, I hear horses. But right. You might think zebras because it's a novel, it's a sexy thing. Coming back to what Dom Cooper had said, we get distracted by the sexy stuff. The sexy stuff is the zebras. Actually, what the reality is the horses.
Okay, nice. Oh, that was your short answer.
Yeah, I've just realised that was a long answer there. Sorry, apologies. Now, can we just re-edit that bit out where I say short? No. Can you just editing the word medium answer. Medium answer.
This is going to be a relatively medium answer. I'll allow that edit, but if it's only a really obviously different voice, like if it's like a
medium.
I'll try and give a really quick answer. This is a big topic, but I think it's definitely one that applies not just to different countries, like continents, like Africa and Asia. I think it applies even here in the UK with big business and little business. For me, don't assume big business has it right would be my first port of call. Just because it doesn't look like what you do or what you've seen in this big business, don't assume it's wrong. You know, it's just different, would be my first port of call. I think we always assume the big businesses have nailed it. And from my experience, they're just as hectic as small businesses, less organized areas, countries, whatever. So don't go in assuming that if you are from the big country that you got it nailed, big company, sorry, that you got it nailed and that they don't. I think you even see that in a continent point of view, like some countries are better than other countries at this, and some countries are like, we all just do things differently. I think if we go in with this arrogance that we're better than you at something, you're never going to learn. So I think for me, if you're on the side of the big company, then don't assume you have it right. Assume you have it wrong and see if you can learn anything from them, and then just see what happens, because I guarantee you'll both learn something from each other. The second one for me, particularly when we start talking about supply chain, like customers or suppliers and contractors and so on, and I see this a lot in the UK, is just a distinct lack of collaboration. Like, remember that we are all trying to create an end product or an end service, whether that is a construction site, whether it's a chocolate bar, whether it's a freaking item of clothing. Like, it is not good for your brand if you found out that this chocolate bar was as a result of child labor. Like, it's not good if this construction site was being run off modern day slavery. Like, it's not good to kill someone on a construction site. You cannot deliver a good product without collaboration. And all I see, particularly in the UK, as I'll use it as an example, all I see as a result of, say, like the CDM regs, which I think was an attempt at trying to encourage collaboration, is just a slopey shoulder, your responsibility, my responsibility. It's like watching fucking Neo in the Matrix dodging bullets. It's just unbelievable.
How often do we come across stuff where big business has said, oh, fill in the PQQ and that's the end of it? And it's like they've just washed their hands of all responsibility when that PQQ has been filled and it's like, oh, it's done now, that's it, and that's the end of.
And it's an absolute joke. And people that just pressure onto these small businesses of saying like, oh, you're the principal contractor, when they're totally not the principal contractor. But like, you want to deliver this product. You want to deliver this project, right? Oh yeah, of course I do. We're the big brand and it's our customer and it's our reputation. So why are you having this approach that's like really not contributory towards success? Why are you having this just like bully approach, not this collaborative approach? Like, so the amount of times I sit in construction meetings and I sit here and I'm just like, I feel like I have to say, hey guys, just all remember, we're all trying to deliver the same fucking project here, instead of just tit for tat. Like, this is your job, this is my job. There's this arrogance that we all know better, and then this lack of collaboration. So for me, it's just like, it's good for all of us in the supply chain if we all are looking after each other and helping each other. Now, there is a line here, though, where we do have to say, no, that is not our responsibility. You need to do that. So I do think you have to define your lines. So that, and the reason I say that is because if you are a big business, there is a perception that you've just got this money tree and you could just throw money at everything and it'll fix everything. Ultimately, that's not the solution. You know, some businesses do need to learn how to fix it, but then they do need to fix it themselves. They can't just say it fixed for them. It's like kind of give a man a fish or teach him to fish, that kind of analogy. Like, you can't just throw money at something and then just go, yeah, go on, here's our risk assessments, off you go and fix it. Like, I think there is a line to say, this is our responsibility. We are going to go beyond this and help you by doing this, and this, but you do have to take some responsibility yourself to fix this. So like, collaboration, 100% need it. Swallow your arrogance and learn from others, but also like, let's all have a sense of our own self-responsibility and our own ownership of something and collaboratively work together to find a solution. But I don't think you can get that ownership unless it's in an environment of collaborative delivery of whatever you're trying to deliver, would be my quick short answer that was nearly as long as yours.
I like it.
Mine was a medium response.
A medium. Medium.
Oh, fucking hell. Right, so, mate.
Great question, Mohammed. Thank you. Genuinely, thank you for that, yes. Mohammed. And for those of you listening, if you've got a question and you would like a short, medium, or long answer, please do let us know.
Maybe we should do the question at the beginning. I don't know. I think this structure is working really well. I really enjoy it. Let us know if you do enjoy it. If you think what we're talking about is really cool and you want some help, go check out riskfluentltd.com or check out Risk Assessor Pro. Connect with me and Peter as well. We'll put all the links in the description below. We're always up for a chat. And guests are always welcome on this as well. I think it'd be cool some days to like go through this same agenda, but with a random guest. And also, Pete, I was going to say, if I'm not around 1 week and you want to do this and bring someone else on, you can do that, mate. So crack on and bring someone else on.
Cool.
I've got a couple of people lined up that I'm going to try and get on that I think will be really interesting to get on. And they're not safety professionals. They're quite the opposite. Yes. So I'm looking forward to that. I need to get them in the diary. But thank you very much for your questions. We've still got about, I think, 30 questions left to answer, if not more. These are all still questions from the expo in Birmingham.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, should we have a quick fire questions episode next episode, do you think? And
I reckon we'll get two questions.
I'll put a stopwatch on. I promise you, I'll put a stopwatch on. And we'll go.
That's a good
it.
Idea. Let's do that. Oh, I don't know, because I don't want to destroy all of our questions and we end up with no questions and no one sends anything
in. No, we won't get through all of them. James, you've just heard us give a short answer to things. We won't get through all of them in an episode. It'd be fun.
Oh, Jesus. Nice one. Right, I'm going to go. Thank you, Pete.
Cool.
That was a good
discussion.
See you later, bud.
See everyone.
Opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.